This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It rained today, again. And all this rain is starting to take a toll. For example, in Worcester, it's already the wettest July the city has ever seen. And we have 11 days to go in July, by the way. So we start the week and the hour looking at the implications of this precipitation, whether it's crashing long-awaited summer plans or it's flooding basements or helping cause a shellfishing ban across most of Massachusetts. Let's start out by talking about the weather itself, checking in with WBUR meteorologist Dave Epstein for a look at when we might finally dry out and what kind of impact all this rain is having. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Good to have you. It is not your fault, but it is hard not to say to you, Dave, come on.
Hey, you know, I'm suffering this with everybody else. I was walking around this morning and I've got plants in the garden that are doing things that I've never seen them doing before, and it's not all good.
Yeah, so any sun in our future, let alone a whole day of sun?
So tomorrow looks actually pretty good. I think it's actually a beach day in the middle of all of this. Temperatures will be up near 90 degrees. We should see mostly sunny skies. I can't rule out an evening thunderstorm, but beach time, it should be a really nice day. You know, it's just one of those hot and humid days that we have had so few of this month.
So one of my favorite questions is, how bad is it? Just how unprecedented is all this rain? We talked about Worcester having the wettest July they've ever had. We discussed before how we had the wettest first week in July over 100 years here in Boston. So, okay, several days have passed since then. How bad is this, relatively speaking?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because I think sometimes our perspective on these things can get a little bit skewed. And so it's helpful to look back at our records, which go back to 1872. And if you look at the records since 1872, there's a few things that stand out. Number one is, today is our 16th day this month with measurable precipitation. Now, the most number of days with any measurable precipitation is April 2019 at 21. So we're getting close to that, and we're probably going to have more showers as we head for Wednesday. So that's another day. And as you mentioned, we still have over a week left in the month. So it's possible that not only does July end up as one of the wettest Julys on record, but it's also the frequency of the rain that's really unusual. 18 is the most number of days in July we've ever had rain, and we will get close to, if not surpass, that.
It's kind of like a record you don't want to root for, but that might happen. So I want to think about this flooding, all right? Risks about flooding, whether it's streams and rivers or it's in basements. To what extent is that the consistency or the total rainfall, that risk, and to what extent is it the intensity of a single rainfall? Do you understand my question?
Absolutely. So it's a little bit of a combination of both. So when you look at a given day, there's what we call a flash flood threshold, and that is the number of inches of rain you would need in a given period of time to create flash flooding. And we can look at that for an hour or 2 hours or a whole day, as you're talking about. And because the ground's so saturated, the threshold that we need in order to get to flooding, in order to get street flooding or small stream flooding, is very low around here. It's actually fairly high on the Cape because it's been a lot drier out there. Even though it hasn't been as sunny as they would like, it has not rained nearly as much. But our flash flood threshold is quite low, so it doesn't take much heavy rain, say in an hour or 2 hours, to recreate flash flooding. Now, I don't see anything here this afternoon that looks terribly bad, and as a matter of fact, I think we're going to be dry tonight, tomorrow night, and it's not really until Wednesday that we'll start to see some showers and storms around again.
So you made that reference to the plants in your yard doing curious things. Is there sort of an environmental impact or an ecosystem impact of these kinds of consistent rains?
Yeah, the impact's really short term for, you know, things like perennials and annuals and vegetables. So I had a conversation with a friend of mine today about our tomatoes, and I'm rapidly losing many of my tomato plants. And so I'm typically an organic gardener, and I've had to resort to, it was a choice between letting them die or resort to some of the, as I call it, the big gun stuff. And this is the synthetic stuff, the non-organic stuff. And that's what I'm currently started using this weekend to try really to save these plants, because they're getting blights, they're getting fungus, they're getting bacterial wilt. And that's also spreading onto some other ornamentals as well. As I mentioned, some of my hollies have some problems. So those things will clear up on the trees and the shrubs, but the vegetables and some of your annuals, you could lose for the year, and then you'll just have to wait till 2022 for that stuff.
Okay, last question. Is the like August? Might we have a normal August, or is this just the shape of things to come this summer?
Well, I mean, we might have a normal August for sure, and odds are we would have a more normal August. I mean, June was the hottest June on record. July is going to be one of, if not the wettest July on record. The odds are that we'll have a more typical August around here with more in the way of sunshine and less rain. It still does, however, look somewhat unsettled in the longer range. I don't see, certainly we're not going to get any drought patterns or anything like that. And we are going to see a return with some shower activity even next week.
So my goal is to have you back in August to declare that it is the most normalist August on record.
I would love it. Yeah, I would love it. I'd love some good sleeping nights, just normal 80-degree weather, lower humidity, some humidity, good beach weather, kind of something for everybody.
Fingers crossed. That's Dave Epstein, WBUR meteorologist. Dave, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, let's turn now to Ed Augustus, the city manager for Worcester, where, as we said a few minutes ago, they have already seen the wettest July ever on record, and we have several days to go. Ed, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ed, is this weighing on you, this rain? How are you holding up?
Yeah, we're doing all right, all things considered. A normal July for us is about 4 inches of rain, and we're already almost 13 inches of rain, as you mentioned, still with over a week to go. So we are a little waterlogged here in Worcester.
And is anything changing in how you do your job or the demands on the city public works, et cetera, as a result of what sounds like three times the amount of normal July rain so far?
Yeah, we had a very busy weekend. We had about 50 different broken limbs and trees down, blocking sidewalks and streets with some of the intense rain we got Saturday. You know, some of our lower-lying areas in the city flooded. We had a number of vehicles that needed to be kind of rescued and towed out of areas that were flooded out. And that can be really dangerous if somebody gets trapped in their car. Yeah, it's been a busy weekend for our first responders and for our DPW crews. We're hopeful that the rain coming Wednesday won't challenge us again in that same way.
So kind of thinking about the bigger picture, Ed, we talked with you in November about Worcester having the potential to be an interesting case study in terms of recovering from the pandemic. Before COVID, you had been rated by Bloomberg as 8th out of 100 U.S. cities in terms of potential for growth. You've got the WooSox. They've been an exciting addition for the city. I wonder, so here it is. It's the summer. We're supposed to be crawling out from under the worst of this pandemic. We already know about the Delta variant. Now you've got this weather phenomenon. Is it holding Worcester back economically from the recovery?
You know, I don't think so. People are still very anxious to get back to any sense of normalcy that they can. And, you know, I was at a WooSox game on Friday night. It was sold out, completely filled, and people were enjoying themselves. There was a slight delay in the game, but, you know, the night ended up being a great night. And, you know, talking to folks over the weekend, even despite the rain, the restaurants were filled and people were still kind of venturing out. So I think people's pent-up demand for socializing and for being out and about is still carrying the day despite some unusually wet weather.
That is encouraging. I do wonder, are you hearing more trouble for residents or business owners, things like flooding in basements and other kind of physical infrastructure problems that affect families and the economy?
You know, not any more than normal. Probably the biggest impact has been the number of tree limbs and trees down. That's kept our forestry department fairly busy keeping things open, especially when we got that real intense rain on Saturday. As was mentioned with the meteorologist, the ground is so wet that when you get that heavy rain, it doesn't have the capability to kind of soak it up in a way that it normally does. So we're seeing the threshold for flooding be a little less than normal. And we do get some situational flooding, some of our low-lying areas, which can certainly impact traffic and the flow of traffic. But nothing too severe, at least so far.
All right, so let's look positive for a minute. Is there something coming up in Worcester over the summer that you're really looking forward to?
Well, we're certainly looking forward to the rest of the WooSock season. There's so much pent-up demand for that. We are having a two-week engagement on the Worcester Common with Hanover Theaters doing 2 weeks of Julius Caesar on the Common, an outdoor performance. And we're hoping that we'll get all of those performances in. It's a great way for the theater to kind of come back post-COVID and, you know, have some, you know, nice outdoor performances as long as it doesn't downpour.
Well, I hope that happens. That's Ed Augustus, Worcester City Manager. Ed, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thank you.
All right, so in addition to the very real, very obvious effects of all this rain, you know, the flooding, the water damage, there are secondary effects as well, and they might be a little less obvious. One of those surfaced last Friday when the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries issued a press release announcing a temporary indefinite ban of shell fishing due to red tide. Here to tell us more is Peter Seminara, the shellfish warden for Gloucester. Peter, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So for those of us who may not know, Peter, remind us, here in New England, what is red tide? What are we talking about with that phrase?
So a red tide in Massachusetts is wholly different from the red tide that they're experiencing in Florida right now. It primarily affects bivalve shellfish. Red tide is a colloquialism. We call them a harmful algal bloom that results in paralytic shellfish poison being concentrated in the meat of bivalve shellfish.
So is the danger there, Peter, that the shellfish will die or that they will survive with the poison in their system and that is poisonous to those who might eat the shellfish?
Exactly. So the shellfish, for instance, a softshell clam or a surf clam is a filter feeder and will filter in this particular dinoflagellate known as the Alexandrium species, which contains a saxotoxin, which is one of the toxins that causes paralytic shellfish poisoning. And then it will concentrate the toxin in its meats. It could possibly be a defense mechanism, an evolved defense mechanism for the shellfish. Most commercial clammers in Gloucester are able to tell when a red tide is imminent because birds won't touch the shellfish that are where they're digging. So,
and has that been going on?
No, this was actually a surprise. We usually monitor, well, the NOAA and Division of Marine Fisheries monitor harmful algal blooms throughout the spring into the beginning of the summer. And then they begin conducting testing in our area. They'll test blue mussels. That's the primary indicator species. And then if the counts start to rise in blue mussels, they'll move on to commercially valuable species like softshell clam. So
okay.
We close blue mussels on excuse me.
No, go ahead. You closed blue mussels last Thursday. Is that what you were going to say?
They closed blue mussels on Thursday, and then the next day closed the remaining bivalve shellfish and carnivorous snails for most of the northern Massachusetts coast.
How many fishermen and women, how many boats does this affect? I mean, give us some sense of the order of magnitude of how many people's livelihoods are affected by a shutdown like this.
So this one is unique as it comes on the tail of a pretty much prolonged extended rain closure for almost the entire month of July. Gloucester harvesters got about 3 days to dig in July, and I believe the harvesters in Essex, which is our neighboring town, got 1 day due to all the rain.
So the rain, what makes it impossible? I'm sorry to interrupt you. The rain makes it. I want to understand what a rain closure is. Is it because it makes it impossible to do the digging, or is it at like a it's closed because it's environmentally unsound?
It introduces contaminants into the shellfish flat. So we'll close on certain rain amounts. Each area is different. We'll close the area based on a certain amount of rain for a certain amount of days. And that's how long it takes for that particular water body to flush pollutants out, and then 2 extra days for the depuration of the shellfish, natural depuration of the shellfish. So
Got it. Okay.
That, they really haven't worked for the most of the month of July. In Gloucester, we have approximately 86 permitted commercial diggers, over 200 recreational harvesters, and for the commercial guys, probably 40%, this is their primary income, would
so
be digging for softshell clams or razor clams.
So how so will we all know? Yeah, yeah, it's a lot. How will we all know
it's
when it's safe again, Peter?
So we continue to monitor. In Gloucester, we'll dig clams that we'll send to the Division of Marine Fisheries for testing. Shellfish biologists at the Division of Marine Fisheries will dig clams, and they'll test the meat every week. And that determines whether the counts are going up or down. And if they're going down, there's a threshold of 80. So if the counts in the shellfish are above 80, they need to get 3 consecutive weeks of decreasing counts. So there's a minimum that the Essex Bay area, let's say, will be closed for at least 3 more weeks. Gloucester,
and are you here? Sorry, go ahead.
Probably 3 weeks. So we're looking at a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks in Gloucester before we reopen to any harvest of shellfish.
And last question for you. What are you hearing from restaurants in the restaurant industry as a result of this?
I don't have much interaction with the end user of the product. I deal primarily with the harvesters and wholesalers, but this will ultimately lead to higher prices for clams at restaurants just due to the shortage. Most of them buy live product directly from the harvester, and then that'll get wholesaled to a restaurant, and the price will go up just due to the demand in the summer for, you know, especially up on the North Shore, fried clams are very popular.
All right, I'm going to take it back from you there. That's Gloucester Shellfish Warden Peter Seminara. I appreciate you taking the time for us. Thank you.
Thank you.